Texas green. You'll ride a black tornado across the western sky, rope an old blue norther and milk it till it's dry. Bulldog the Mississippi and its ears down flat, long before you take this cowboy's hat.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Standing Outside the Fire. My name's Matt, and that was the late, great Chris Ledoux. That was by request, actually, which I guess is a good place to start. I've had several people contact me, either directly on the phone, via Facebook, or whatever other avenues, and make some requests about some of the music or some of the topics, and I'm going to be doing some requests tonight, and that was the first one. So I do appreciate the feedback, and it's very valuable to me and helpful. Not only the, hey, great job, which is appreciated, but some of the constructive criticism too. Some of it has also been not so constructive, but criticism nevertheless, and it's more ball busting than anything, which is to be expected when you put yourself out there and get listeners like y'all, who, some of who, not all of you, but some of who are clowns yourselves. So anyway, it's fun, and I appreciate it. You know, one of the things that people have asked me is, how did you get into doing a podcast? And the answer is really just sort of by happenstance. I was having coffee with a couple of my buddies tonight, and after watching the Avalanche win, go Avs, one of whom I used to work with and one of whom I currently work with, and all of us share very similar viewpoints. One of those individuals and I were driving up to North Dakota, had been talking and listening to a podcast, which was actually the first one that I'd ever heard, and from start to finish, or almost start to finish. And he and I were sitting there talking and wondering, well, geez, what, you know, we could do this. This doesn't seem that hard. We're funny. People find us funny, or at least we find ourselves funny. That was part of the start to this whole deal for me. And then I'm working on another project I think I told you about, and came across this podcast kit that had the microphone and the earphones and the mixer and the computer interface. So I figured I'd give it a try, and I've been winging it ever since. Seemingly positive results from everybody. So I do ask that if it's a podcast that you enjoy or the series you've enjoyed, please share it with your friends in whatever format you can. As I said in the first episode, it's not about me or my ego. It's about sharing the knowledge and what is becoming collective knowledge and a collective experience, because you all are sharing your experiences with me, and I can help translate those into at least some spoken words that are sometimes eloquent and other times babbling and bumbling and fumbling. But either way, we get the message out. And so today's episode will focus on ways in which we all can deal with the stresses of being a first responder or the stresses of everyday life. And we'll take a look at some of the ways that I personally deal with those stresses and some of the ways that y'all deal with those. I've had a number of people who've spoken with me directly or through Facebook page give me their input. So we'll look at those. We'll talk a little bit about what works and what doesn't work, and talk about why those things work for some people and not for others. Okay, so dealing with stress, I guess the first thing we have to think about is, are the stresses for first responders different than the average person? And of course, the answer is yes. There's no question about that. The research shows it time and time again. But to avoid being exclusionary, I think we want to look at just stress in general, because the stresses that we all face, whether we're a first responder or not, are impacting to our lives. And I think the easiest way to approach this is to not necessarily talk about the big five stressors in life, and I don't remember what they are off the top of my head, but I know that divorce, death of a loved one, moving is a huge stressor for people. Makes me want to hurt people. Moving sucks. For those of you who have recently moved, I'm sorry. For those who will be moving shortly, I'm sorry. Don't call me. I hate moving. So nah, I'd be happy to help, really, honestly. No, I wouldn't. So we're gonna skip over those because those are a whole nother ball of wax. What I want to look at is how we handle the everyday stresses of our work and then family life and relationships and so forth. So not long ago, I asked people on the One Foot in the Black Facebook page that I help manage, how, after a difficult call, what do you do to deal with it? And one of the things that I found interesting was that from the respondents that jumped in and put some comments on there, music was a common one. And that was one that I saw a number of times. And I think music is healing just in and of itself. But especially for those difficult times, and I believe I've spoken about my interest in music and what it does for me, but we talked a little bit about that in the perspective episode. So music is a helpful tool. It can bring us to a different place. It can help elevate mood, can change how we're looking at the day. In good ways and bad ways. And I've talked to y'all about driving and having that one song come on and having it impact me in a significant way. But so a number of people spoke about how they put on music either to elevate mood or change mood or to match their mood in some cases. Some of the other things that people indicated were, hey, I want to be by myself. And few people, maybe one or two, mentioned talking to somebody else. There was a comment about calling my go-to person, right? So what a great idea. A plan where you can call somebody and say, look, I had a really shitty day. I had a really shitty call. I'm struggling. I need to talk. Awesome plan. And I'll talk more about talking here in a minute or two. A couple people talked about either calling or going and seeing their kids. And what a great thing. You know, you get to those moments, you have those life-altering calls or situations for those of us as first responders. And man, the only thing you want to do is go see your kids. You know, it's funny, you go to the school, you have the look in your face, you say, you know, where's my son or daughter? Is there any chance I can see him for just a couple of minutes? And somehow, some way, the staff at the school understands. And if they know you're a first responder, they get it at some level. Because there are times where all you want to do is just get your arms around those kiddos. Especially after a bad day or a bad shift. And that is very true. And I myself have done that. I've done that on days where I've been scheduled to go on a fire that night or the next day. As far as, you know, fire assignments, wildland fire assignments, where there is some planning ahead. I'll go. There were a couple of times I went and took D out of school and said, we're having a Daddy D day. And we did that. We spent time together. And I remember doing that specifically before I left for Georgia, which I knew was going to be a long haul. And those were valuable. It makes the transition of me being gone more helpful. So that stress at home is lessened a little bit. It was still difficult, but at least it was lessened. So we're not talking about just our stress, but the stress of those at home. It was interesting to read through some of these comments. Some people were fairly candid. Some of it was joking, you know, that morbid gallows humor that we'd go to sometimes. And man, I wish that I had some recording devices when some of these people are throwing stuff out after these calls. It's amazing. Never ever for the public to hear, because for those of you not in the first responder realm, it can get pretty dark pretty quick. Pretty disturbing if you don't understand the need. And we'll look at why those jokes are valuable, why they're important, why they're necessary. And why something that you would never, ever say at the Thanksgiving dinner table is both commonplace and perfectly acceptable at the firehouse table or at the coffee bar in the police station or, you know, in the ambulance bay or in dispatch. If you have a chance, unfortunately, in dispatch, there's a lot of times you don't take a break with anybody else because of the staffing, and you're just looking at going and taking your break on your own. And so there's not necessarily that decompression until after the shift is over, if at all. A number of people said, look, I go back, we talk with the crew, we talk about what happened. We game plan it a little bit. We do the instant replay. We go through it, try and capture some of the lessons learned from those calls, which is awesome. It really is. And I think more often than not, though, those are the mechanics, the tactics, the process of what we did, how we did it, how we can do it better. And that's great. There's huge value in that. But I think we need to be clear. There is a significant difference between tactical after-action reviews and talking with somebody about how it made you feel. And I know, I get it. We're back into the rainbows and puppy dogs and unicorn farts. But that's where we're at. We can't deal with stress without talking about how we feel. You know, can't talk about stress and ways to deal with stress until we talk about our feelings. And I know that scares people off. I get it. But if we're going to be better, we have to do things different. Doing them different is starting to talk about them and talk about the things we don't want to talk about, but we need to talk about. Some of the other comments were pretty similar and sort of double-edged sword here. One person referred to, hey, I'm going to go, have a couple of beers. And another person said, well, I've got to be really mindful of my alcohol intake. Then PT, physical training, going and working out, getting exercise, going for walks. Those are all really, really good things. And let's talk for a minute about the alcohol side of it. Unfortunately, that is a common go-to for first responders. And as you may or may not remember, as a recovering alcoholic myself, that was a very common tool that I used, but it wasn't dealing with anything. It was hiding it. It was drowning it. It was forgetting about it. Those issues still remained. They still do to this day. You have to face those. You have to deal with them. I'm not going to sit here and be a teetotaler and say, don't ever drink beer. I wish I could, but I can't. For those of you that can and do, just understand that after those serious calls, if your alcohol intake is increasing, that's likely a coping mechanism. And I would ask you to question whether or not that was more helpful or maybe helpful in the short term, but what is it doing to you in the long term?
A full moon shining bright, edge of the water, we were feeling all right. Back down a country road, the girls are always hot and the beer is ice cold.
So we know alcohol is potentially a dangerous coping mechanism if we're not careful with it and we don't manage it appropriately. I guess ultimately for me, if you have those bad calls or those bad shifts and your immediate go-to the minute you walk in the door or shortly thereafter is to look for a bottle of booze, whatever it is, you really need to take a long, hard look at what's really going on. I'm not here to assess your alcohol use. I just know where it led me, and it was a difficult path. And not that everybody takes that path. Some of you have the blessing to be able to go do those things and not have it impact life negatively. I did not have that opportunity. Drinking and I did not mix, and in the later stages of my disease, it got out of hand, way out of hand. And I regret some of that, but the only thing I can do is live a better life today and make better decisions today. I can't go back and change things. So, as I've said before, regret is a wasted emotion. So I try and live that and move forward. What other coping mechanisms? We've talked about going out. Exercise is great. And I'll be the first to admit, I'm not one to use it as often as I should. But the endorphins that your brain gets, the benefit to you physically and mentally is huge. Anytime anybody talks about dealing with PTSD or depression or just having a bad day, going out and doing physical activity, whatever it is. It doesn't matter if you're going for a walk with your dogs or your cats, if you have cats and you take cats for a walk. I wouldn't, but that's just me. Get out of the house or your apartment. Get out of wherever you are. Go get some fresh air. Now, for some of you, that's very easy if you live in temperate climates. For those of us who live in the upper Midwest, the Front Range of the Rocky Mountains, anywhere where winter comes in and takes hold, that can be difficult. That means getting bundled up, getting in your car, starting the car, or scraping the car. It can be a long process, but just by getting out, getting that activity, the benefits from a physical and mental and emotional aspect are huge, and no medication can mimic that. It's in every single recommendation that I have ever read or seen. And so for those of you who aren't even struggling with any of those illnesses or issues, you just have a bad day. So maybe, here might be a Matt suggestion or something from Matt's world, before you crack open the beer, go for a walk. Go for a run if you're so inclined. I am not inclined to run. I hate running. But I know many of you are, so good for you. I might take the dogs for a walk. I might go for a hike. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be outside. It just needs to be something constructive. Something that you're interested in that can give you that moment of zen. And so something that one of my friends was explaining was that her go-to at this time of year in the cold Wyoming winters is knitting afghans. Okay, so she said that she has to concentrate, right? She has to focus. And that's what she has to keep her mind on. So it can't wander. It can't go to those places of stress. And in fact, she said that she's been knitting so much that she has an afghan that can go over her entire car or truck. I can't remember which. Just because she's been knitting and knitting and knitting, and she knows how stressed out she is based on how big the Afghan blankets become. But what a great idea. For me, I use tying fly fishing flies the same way. And I haven't done it in a while, but it requires focus to be good at it. And it requires patience, which I'm not. I'm not a patient man. But that's why I took up fly fishing in the first place. Because you can't be good at it unless you're focused and you are just in the moment. And that's something that some of us have a real hard time doing, is just staying in the moment. So some other things. I used to work with a guy who's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mind-body stuff there? Yeah, absolutely. If you need some information, I'd be happy to put you in touch with him if that's something that you're interested in. In fact, I have two guys who are involved with that, and they really, really like it because, again, it's a mind-body thing. You've got to concentrate and pay attention, mainly so you don't get your ass kicked. It's not like, you know, catching fish, but or knitting blankets. But it's something different, you know, mind-body deal again. For me, it's about getting outside in the wilderness. And we talked about this time of year and being difficult. I've got a buddy who lives up. I've got a buddy who lives up north in northern Wyoming, and he's been going snowshoeing with his dog, and so he's utilizing the seasons, but still getting out and getting out and about and getting his dog out. And what a great alternative. And you know, yeah, snowshoes are an investment, a couple hundred bucks, but you go 10 or 12 times and it's the same way as getting a gym membership. And he lives in a gorgeous part of the country, and what a great way to do that. He was also talking to me about building some firearms. And I know that may not be in everybody's wheelhouse, but again, requires concentration. For me, I also do woodworking. I also build log furniture. That is something that requires my concentration. And so I have to be focused for it to work well. And when I am not focused, I find that my furniture turns out really, really crappy. A couple other guys, they brew beer. And I know I went back and we talked about the whole alcohol thing. But brewing beer is a craft. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about crafts and hobbies, all of which require focus. And those hobbies don't even have to be, you know, singular, single-person hobby or a hobby alone. I know one guy who he enjoys playing role-playing games. And even though I don't understand it, other than having dabbled in Dungeons and Dragons when I was in high school, or yeah, it was probably before that, just to reveal my ultimate dorkdom. But even then, I didn't really quite understand how it worked. I knew it was a bunch of dice and a book, and that was about it. But, you know, for this guy, that is his thing, and it's amazing. And he is, I mean, he travels to tournaments and, you know, all of that. And while that may not be my gig, what a great opportunity to go meet other people, be engaged, right? You're not sitting back at home being by yourself mulling in your shit. You're out there, you're involved, you're getting to interact with people. And that's something else we haven't talked about. You know, a lot of my go-tos are solitary items. They're solitary hobbies because I need my alone time, as several people had said in the response to my original post. And that's fine. But don't isolate forever, because if you isolate, that's where you start to wallow in your own shit. And that's when life goes downhill, or at least it has for me. Once I start to isolate, I start to shut down. I stop communicating with people. In fact, I can go back onto my Facebook history and notice my patterns of sort of my depressive states, because I don't want to interact with anybody. It's pretty clear and pretty obvious when I go back and look at it. So those are things that I have to force myself to do, is engage with people when I'm having difficult times. And so the same goes the other route, is that if you know your friends are in stressful situations, or they had a bad call, or they're dealing with difficult life issues, that's when to engage them. Even if they seem happy-go-lucky on the surface, engage them. I'm telling you from experience. Engage them. Call them. Hey, let's go out to coffee. And you're going to get every excuse in the book. Don't allow it. Just show up. If it's, I don't want to go out of the house, that's fine. I don't want to get out of the apartment, that's fine. I'm coming in and I'm going to sit here and we're going to talk. That's what we need to do. We need to make sure our friends are okay. And don't take the, oh yeah, man, I'm fine. Don't allow that. Don't walk away from, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. Because more often than not, they're not. And sometimes they are, but we can't take that risk. So check in on your family and friends. And I saw a meme the other day that I think is pretty poignant. You need to check in on the ones that seem the strongest, because typically they are the ones who are battling the strongest demons too. It just seems to work that way. The ones who are outwardly calm and confident, and you know, they appear to be just have their shit together. You know, they're fighting battles too. Everybody is. And so just make sure your friends and family are good. You start to see changes in behavior, changes in their speech, their sleep patterns, their eating patterns. Something's up. So dig a little bit. And yeah, they might get mad. Who cares? You know, you look at the alternatives. You look at the potentials. So what if you piss your friend off by badgering them? At least they know you give a shit about them. Before you do anything else, maybe go enjoy that activity outside, get some fresh air, because unfortunately most of us do work inside. Now that might be in an ambulance, in a dispatch center, and for those of you who are not first responders, same, y'all have bad days too. And if you remember my perspective episode a few episodes back, it's the same. You might be dealing with different types of stresses, but they're stresses nevertheless. If your boss is breathing down your neck about getting that project done, or the boss doesn't like the way that you approached your customer because your customer was being a total jackwagon and the idea of the customer is always right is wrong, those are stresses. You know, you might have the weight of a whole business on your shoulders. Meanwhile, you're trying to deal with life on life's terms. And then the family stresses. Being in a committed relationship is stressful. And I love my wife dearly, but it's stressful sometimes because she and I don't always see eye to eye. It's stressful being a parent because you know everything you say and do is being watched and being assessed. and being put away in a little brain for later on, for good or evil. You know that you are responsible for shaping the life of a little human. And that's a huge fucking responsibility. That weighs on my shoulders every single day. These are stresses of everyday lives. Let's say you're not married and you don't have kids, but you have a dog or a cat. There's a responsibility. I have friends who are both in fire. They're both in Wyland Fire, and they both come and go. You know, there's stress there because they're in different parts of the country for the better part of fire season. And so there's stresses of trying to deal with a long-distance relationship for 6 months out of the year. Meanwhile, they're doing dangerous shit and hoping to come home safe. And they have a couple critters, and then they have to take care of the critters or have those taken care of while they're gone. That's a stressful situation. You know, I know families that have mothers or fathers who are working in different states, and they travel. And so for their 48-hour shift, mom or dad is gone for all intents and purposes. And, you know, for me, when I was working in fire here locally, even on my tours, my 48-hour tours, if something happened, major happened at home, you know, a personal crisis, I could say to one of the guys, hey, I got to go. Can you cover me? I got to run home. This family didn't have that option because they were far enough away. And in most large municipal departments, you don't have that option. You know, coming home, running home for half an hour is not an option. That was one of the luxuries that I had working for a small district, was that I was able to do that, provided that I had coverage, and usually that wasn't too much of a problem. Most people don't have that luxury. I know another family where mom is a engineer and works a 48-96, if I'm not mistaken, so that's 48 on and 96 off, for those of you who aren't familiar. And they have two kids, and dad is a Wyland firefighter. So during the summer, he's up and gone at the drop of a hat for 14, even 21 days at a go. Then the kiddos are dealing with mom and dad being gone for various time frames, and they make it work, and it's amazing. And they support each other, and they support their kids, but it's a totally different dynamic than a 9-to-5 scenario. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just different. Kids do adapt to that. But it is added stress. Those are stressful things. Hey, I'm getting a call from dispatch. I got to fly out to Oregon in 4 hours. And now we have a 4-hour window to get life put together and figure it out for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however long I'm going to be gone. And in fire season, that may happen over and over and over again. I remember going to a fire in California. We were gone for 3 weeks because it was running and gunning. Came home, was home for literally 2 days, and turned around and got sent right back. And for some people who work on hotshot crews or helitack crews or are assigned to an engine with a federal land management agency, that's the expectation. But as a structural firefighter who dabbles in wildland, which was sort of my last role, you're not expected to do that necessarily all that often. And so that was an added stress. And I was gone for, you know, probably 6 weeks in that 2 months. And that's stressful. And is it what I signed up for? Yeah, absolutely. That doesn't make it any less stressful. On that role, one of my friends was killed on a fire. We weren't super close, but it was close enough to bring me to my knees. And that's another added stress, because we do that. And I don't know if any of you have seen the video or the transcript. And I don't remember the general's name, but he was briefing his folks, and it was a emergency response, if I'm not mistaken, of some type, flooding. And he came out and he said, I'm not going to go out there and say, you know, go be safe. He said, go out there and do dangerous shit, because that's what you do. You do dangerous shit. Go out there, do dangerous shit, and come back home safe. Because I think he'd gotten tired of the, you know, be safe out there, the typical safety officer approach. And those are all major stressors. And then look at the family. Look at what they deal with when we're gone, whether it be a 48-hour shift, a 12-hour shift for those of you who work those. You know, when mom and dad are at work, and work means going into burning buildings, or being out on the interstate where, you know, kids who are my son's age and maybe a little younger and certainly older, see people getting hit all the time. You know, we saw an article about the trooper in Colorado who was hit and killed in the snowstorm just by being out doing his job. That weighs on a kid's mind. That kicks around in their brains. Dad, you know, what happens when you're out on the interstate? Could you get hit? And what does a guy say? I'm not going to lie to him. Yeah, son, I could get hit. And he said, well, you know, that's scary. And I said, yeah, absolutely that's scary. And he said, well, how do you deal with that? And I said, I keep my head on a swivel, kiddo. You know, I pay attention. I look out for my guys. I look out for myself. But at the end of the day, you have a semi that loses control. What's a guy to do? We do dangerous shit. And the same holds for anybody in emergency services. If police officers are chasing the bad guys with guns, at least for us fire and EMS folks, we're not chasing them. But we do face them. We do deal with them. I've walked into countless drug dens, not by choice, but because someone called 911. And I don't get to carry a sidearm when I go into those places. And it can be dangerous. EMS deals with it all the time. I can't state the statistic off the top of my head, but the number of physical assaults, certainly verbal assaults, are through the roof for EMS providers. And then you think about dispatch. I wonder what they have to hear and deal with. I only heard, you know, a little bit of it. I could only hack it for about a month before I said this isn't for me, but you can only imagine the verbal abuse they get. Those are all extra stressors. So I got off track a little bit about how we deal with them, but identifying what they are is important too. So we talked about physical exercise, which is hugely important. We talked about the booze aspect. I'm leaving that one up to you. I think those of you who are using alcohol to de-stress know whether or not you're in deep or not. You know what's appropriate and what's not. And if you're in the it's not appropriate realm, give me a call. You know, as always, I'm available. You can reach me if we're not friends in person. You can always reach out. The Facebook page is a great way to get a hold of me. We do have a Standing Outside the Fire Facebook page, and I know some of you dislike Facebook, and I dislike portions of it, but it's a great way for me to keep in touch with the people that I care about from all over the world, and then, you know, get in touch with new folks. So please, you're welcome to use that avenue to get a hold of me if you need. You know, I'm not a doc. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm none of those. I'm just a guy, but I can help get you where you need to be if you've gotten to that spot in your life. For those of you who have reached out in whatever form, I do really appreciate it. I'm not looking for accolades, but it does help me to know that this is helping y'all, at least. And in fact, one of my friends sent me a message the other day, and he said, you know, I was listening to your podcast the other morning, sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee in my hand, and it felt like we were sitting around the table at the firehouse trying to solve the world's problems. And it dawned on me that that's exactly what the feel of this is, what I want. And he encapsulated it very well. So thank you for that. I appreciate you reaching out. That also coming from a guy who is a constant ball buster. So for him to reach out and be serious for a minute was really quite nice. And to be fair, I'm the same way in return. So to deal with the stresses we look at. You know, somebody the other day told me one of the ways that they use, or one of the things that they utilize, is yogurt. And I didn't quite understand how, you know, if they were eating it, or if it was like a yogurt like scrub for their face or something. And so I asked them, you know, what do you mean yogurt, and what, you know, what flavor do you use? And they said, no, not yogurt, Matt, yoga. I said, oh, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense, not yogurt. I guess I had a moment. Anyway, no, yoga is apparently, I haven't tried it because I am miserably out of balance. Just to add to my list of maladies, probably about 15 years ago, I lost all of the hearing in my left ear. So I'm completely deaf in my left ear, and there were some concerns about balance issues, and I'm not sure if that's the thing, but anyway, my balance is not what it should be, and I probably could get a lot better with training. So yoga is one of those things that, you know, oh gosh, well, you know, you see these dudes in tights and, you know, unitards, and it doesn't have to be like that, you guys. You know, and women are really, really good at yoga because, you know, their bodies move different and can stretch different. That's why I think women are drawn to yoga, but that doesn't mean that it's not a good possibility for men. And I don't intend to be sexist about it at all. We're just gangly and awkward and even still. Some really good opportunities there. I know that I'll look up. I did find somebody sent me a link about yoga, and it's geared towards first responders specifically. How they do that, not sure. Again, geez, Matt, yoga. Now we're really getting touchy-feely. Why can't we just go to the bar, grab a beer, and watch the game? You can. You absolutely can. But why not look at all of our options available? And the same thing that's going to work for you, which is cracking a beer and watching the game, is not going to work for somebody else. So if some of this stuff doesn't apply to you, that's fine. Tune it out. Stop the podcast, whatever you need to do. But for some people, that will work and does work and has worked. So why not investigate all those possibilities? So I'll look into that yoga for first responders. I'll put that up on our Facebook page for those of you who are interested. You can take a look at that. And I think the program started in California. Big surprise, yoga in California. But anyway, it doesn't matter where it comes from. If it can make me better, if it can make me feel better, if it can make me stronger emotionally and mentally and physically, what a talk about bang for your buck. That's a real winner there for sure. So then, I know there are a number of other ways that people de-stress, and I've barely scratched the surface. And what I think would be helpful is if you have ways which you utilize to de-stress after bad calls or after a bad shift, I'd like to see you post those. I'd like to see you go to the Standing Outside the Fire Facebook page, jump on there, and tell us what you use, because what you might be using could be very helpful for someone else. And let's share that stuff, right? Let's not keep that to ourselves. That's the whole point of this podcast, is to get perspectives and opinions out there. And it's not just mine, because my opinions and perspectives are sometimes so vastly skewed. I mean, just look back at my history and what you know of me. It's been a long, wild ride so far. And I don't have all the answers, so I need you guys to help. And if you can share those with your brothers and sisters that are listening to this, and the general public too, because, you know, I have friends who are listening to this who have never been in fire or EMS or first responder roles at all, and they can benefit too. And that being said, for those of you who aren't first responders, the same goes. Your tools and techniques can help us too. This is not exclusionary at all. So if you would, jump on that Facebook page, provide us some insight. If you have links to any of those tools and techniques, that would be great. If we can make it a clearinghouse for people to connect and talk and get engaged with each other, that would be a great opportunity for us to do that. And that'll also allow me to look at how we're doing. And if you have thoughts about what you would like to see or hear on the Facebook page, in the podcast, I don't have all the answers, you guys, and I run out of ideas. And in fact, this podcast was generated by somebody's interest in how we deal with the stresses that we face on a day-to-day basis. So with that, I think we will leave it there for the day. thank you once again for your time, spending it with me and with us. And I look forward to having you back for the next episode. And keep an eye on the Facebook page. Please jump in, engage there. That would be great. And I hope you guys have a great week. Thanks.
Just a mile.